Welcome to Africa Live on the WhoRadio.com. I'm your host, Nyabinga Zimbabwe, and we have been in over the past couple of weeks. There's been a speaking tour going on. The African People Solidarity Day events have been held in the cities of Oakland, California, St. Petersburg, Florida. There's one going on now in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And on this speaking tour are a number of comrades who are in the forefront of the struggle for African liberation. Included in that tour is Chairman Omalia Shetela, Chairman of the African People's Socialist Party. Included in that tour is Penny Hess, the chairwoman of the African People's Solidarity Committee, an organization of North Americans who work under the leadership of the African People's Socialist Party in winning solidarity within the white community with Black Power. And also included on that tour were two other comrades who both are in the U.S. From different parts of Africa. One comrade, Comrade Mufanalo Squacha, who is the executive secretary of the Pan-Africanist Congress of Azania, and then another comrade, Comrade Cherno Alpha Mba, who folks who are regular listeners of Uhuru Radio should already be familiar with. He's the director of the Africanist Movement of West Africa. And I had the opportunity to, over the past few days, interview these two comrades, Comrade Mfanalo Squacha and Comrade Cherno Alpha Mba. I thought it important to do so to bring to Uhuru Radio the incredible presentations that they made, the incredible amounts of information informing us about what's going on those fronts of the African liberation movement. I think it's important to note that both their organizations, the Africanist Movement in West Africa as well as the Pan-Africanist Congress of Azania, have joined the process to build the African Socialist International. To liberate and unify our Africa and our African people who are dispersed all around the world. So over this week and next week, we're going to be playing those interviews with those two comrades, beginning today with the interview that I did with Comrade Cherno Alpha Mba on October 18th. That was last Thursday. we had him in the studio and had the opportunity to do an interview with Comrade Cherno Alpha Mba. Now, for those who don't know, who may be listening for the first time, in West Africa, there's been quite a bit going on with the rebellion that had occurred in Guinea-Conakry, with the recent elections in Sierra Leone. There's quite a bit of motion happening in West Africa, which is a place where, you know, there's quite a bit of instability for imperialism in the first place. And so much of the interview, much of the discussion that we had in this interview was based around those things. So without further ado, I'm going to go ahead and begin playing this presentation. Again, this is a pre-recorded interview. Pre-recorded interview with Comrade Cherno Alpha Mba, the director of the Africanist Movement. You know, he will not be able to take your phone calls or emails, but feel free to shoot us an email or whatnot. Anyway, we'll play this interview with Comrade Cherno Alpha Mba. This is Africa Live on AhuruRadio.com. I'm your host, Nyabinga Zimbabwe, and I'm here with Comrade Cherno Alpha Mba, who is the director of the Africanist Movement. Uhuru, comrade, it's good to have you here with us.
Yes, Uhuru, thank you.
I want to ask you, first of all, for those of our listeners who may be listening for the first time, can you let them know who the Africanist Movement is?
Thank you very much for that question. The Africanist Movement is an African liberation movement that was established 5 years ago, immediately when we returned from Guinea-Conakry. Of course, in the mid-1990s, we were involved in the pro-democracy campaigns that resulted in the conduct of elections that transformed Sierra Leone into a democratic state, quote-unquote democratic state, what I mean. You know, before then, the country had existed under a military government that was repressive, a very repressive and brutal regime. And what happened was that there was a popular demand for, you know, what they tend to refer to as a civilian government. So we were in the forefront of that campaign, and unfortunately, people like Tijan Kaba and some of the middle-class puppets who were working for the interest of the British, we are able to hijack that particular campaign, and it ended up being a victory for, you know, the middle class who represented imperialist interest. So we built various other organizations, one of which was the Awareness Movement, which we pulled together to campaign against the atrocious activities of the Revolutionary United Front, that is the RUF, headed by Fode Sankara. I'm talking about when the conflict in Sierra Leone was at its peak. So this, as a result of our activities and our campaigns, we were declared, you know, as enemies of the state by the government, you know, the so-called democratic government. So that forced us into exile. That was around 1999. So in Guinea-Conakry, we felt the need to fight for the rights and protection of, you know, about 1 million Africans who were trapped in what they tend to refer to as refugee camps, you know, that were run by the United Nations at the time. So these Africans were being harassed, intimidated, and brutalized by the Guinean security forces, because the security forces saw them as people who were responsible for the crisis situations in Liberia and in Guinea and in Sierra Leone. And they adopted what they called a protective mechanism, which was to deter the infiltration of these rebel activities into Guinea-Conakry. So as a result of that, the masses of African people who were fleeing from the conflict situations in Liberia and Sierra Leone, we are equally facing the harassments of the Guinean security forces. So there was no organization on the ground that was, you know, campaigning against some of those human rights violations. So we built what was then referred to as a Young Writers Association that I pulled together, because in Guinea-Conakry we had African journalists from Liberia and Sierra Leone who were in exile in Guinea-Conakry as a consequence of the political situation in those countries. So the Young Writers Association developed automatically to a mass movement that was fighting for the rights and protection of the refugee, so-called refugee population in Guinea-Conakry. So because of our activities, we were able to build a newspaper that exposed some of the human rights violations that were being committed against the Africans in some of those camps. So as it turned out to be, scared by the Guinean regime, and we were put in prison. So some of our members fled because our activities, according to the Guinean government, went contrary to the terms and conditions of our political asylum, of our asylum. So what that means was that we either had to leave the country, you know, and by then most of our forces had to leave for Europe, the US and various other places around the world because of fear of being intimidated or being, you know, killed by state agents. So by then, the so-called Sierra Leone crisis had reached its own conclusion. So the government had already entered into an agreement with the Revolutionary United Front, and part of the terms of the Lomé Peace Accord that was signed, which ended the so-called war, you know, was that the government should extend a blanket amnesty to all those individuals who were opposed to the policies of the government at the time. So being that as it may, we took advantage of that situation to go back to Freetown, and I took up the responsibility of reorganizing what remained of the Young Writers Association into a mass movement to fight for the independence and the unification of Africa and African people under an all-African socialist state. We while in Guinea, I came to the realization that Africans, you know, face the same situation, and that the crisis situation in Sierra Leone and Liberia and in, you know, what was happening in Guinea-Conakry was part of, you know, an international conspiracy that was being orchestrated by, you know, a group of imperialist nations, including the United States, the British, and their various multinational corporations for the theft of the resources that we have in that particular region of the continent. And in this case, we are talking about diamonds, the bauxite, and the iron ore, and the numerous other resources that you have in West Africa. So because of that situation, we think that an organization that should fight for the interests of the workers and the peasants is needed to fight for the liberation and unification of, you know, the people of West Africa and Africa in general, you know, against the oppressive conditions that have been imposed on us as a consequence of that situation. So that is how we formed the Africanist movement. So in a brief, the Africanist movement is a mass organization that is fighting for the liberation, the uncompromising liberation and unification of Africa and African people under an all-African socialist state.
And now in Sierra Leone, where you were headquartered at, there were some elections that happened recently. Can you tell us about the process of the elections there?
Like, you know, any other African country, for example, since 1996, that is, you know, or maybe since 2002, following what happened was that the conclusion of the so-called civil war in Sierra Leone resulted in the occupation of the country by the United Nations and the British, who have maintained a military base in Freetown since 2002. You have Western intelligence agencies like the US FBI, who now have an office in Freetown. So because of this situation, the imperialists have, you know, made it a policy to make sure that they protect their interest. You know, as I'm speaking right now, there are 90 corporations in Kono who are looting the diamonds, you know, from Kono, and these corporations are owned by the British, the US, and all, you know, and the various other imperialist nations. So since 2002, the election that happened was organized by the United Nations. And the party that was in power was the Sierra Leone People's Party, headed by Tidjane Kabah, who was and is still an imperialist, you know, puppet. So the conditions of the masses became worsened under the same situation since the conclusion of the conflict. And the thing is that the conditions that gave rise to the crisis, you know, are still evident more than ever. So the for the past 2 years, the United Nations have been working on a program of what they call, you know, the withdrawal of their own troops. And now the country is in control of the British and all that. They are now moving their troops to Liberia. You know, so the past elections were, you know, the first elections to be organized since the end of what they call the civil war. So these are elections that were contested by, you know, the two dominant political parties in Sierra Leone, namely the Sierra Leone People's Party that was in power, and the All People's Congress, which was the opposition party, and various other parties that are, you know, either breakaway parties of the two dominant parties that are, you know, that I've just named. So, in short, these are elections, you know, that were closely contested. They were held in the midst of violence, in the midst of intimidation, and an election where all kinds of voter bribery were used by the middle class in their contest and competition for power.
Now, what was the role of the Africanist movement in the electoral process?
Okay, like I said, you know, the interesting thing is that the Sierra Leone constitution itself, that is the constitution that they are currently using, the 1991 constitution, they like to call it a multi-party constitution, or a constitution that should allow the process of political pluralism, that is, people should have the rights to participate freely in the current political dispensation process. But one thing that we think, you know, is problematic within the constitution is the electoral laws. You know, one of the criteria for an individual to run for a president is the electoral age. The constitution provides that you need to be 45 years in order to qualify to run for a president. And the country has a life expectancy that is 37. And what that means is that the vast majority of the population are below the electoral age. In fact, 90% of those who registered to vote during the past elections were between the ages of 18 to 36. So you see, so these are some of the issues, you know, that we feel are still problematic in the electoral process. And besides, there is the notorious Public Order Act of 1965. This was a law that was enacted way back in 1965, you know, by the SLPP, and then it was implemented by the APC when it transformed the country into a one-party dictatorship in 1978. Among the, part of the provision of that particular act is that it restricts freedom of association, freedom of assembly, and the right to organize, you know, freely within what they would tend to refer to as a democratic process. So the Africanist movement looked at these, you know, issues, and we felt that the so-called democratic process is fraudulent and is problematic, and we felt the need of raising the consciousness of the people around these issues. Because we feel that the people are not adequately represented in governance, and part of the thing is that the vast majority of the people who are so-called youths, who are below the ages of 37, you know, even if they vote, they are not represented in governance. They are prevented from active participation in decision making. So we think that key to a democratic process has to be the right of every individual to participate freely in the decision making, of the country. That's the right to participate in policy formulation.
Yes.
So we developed what we call the National Electoral Campaign. The National Electoral Campaign was motivated by our desire to raise, you know, the understanding of the masses and to point out some of these issues that we feel are very problematic. We think that first and foremost, you know, the electoral laws should be reviewed, and that the Public Order Act should be abolished because it prevents people from, you know, association, the right to associate, the right to belong to a political party of your own choice. And worst of all, it says that one of the provisions says that the police have the right to arrest a meeting of two or more people if that particular meeting, you know, is believed to be a political meeting and it does not have the authorization of the police. So you see, so, and it says you cannot hold a political rally without the approval of the police. You have to write the head of the police, and you need a permission from the police to organize political meetings. But we found out that the political parties or the middle class who are in power do not even write to the police to seek a permission to organize their own meetings. So these are laws that are just meant to suppress the masses of African people in Sierra Leone from, you know, taking control of their own lives.
Yes.
So the Africanist movement, you know, realized this problematic situation, and we felt the need of raising the consciousness, like I said, of the masses around these questions. So this is what motivated us to build a national campaign, you know, that resulted in the formation of an Africanist coalition that was made up of 40 other organizations who believed, you know, through our own leadership, that some of these issues need to be raised. So, in essence, it also culminated in the development of a National Democratic Revolutionary Program that, among other things, you know, challenged, you know, some of these issues and called for, you know, a process that will result into a people's power. We called for but maybe some of these issues will be discussed later. But, yeah, you know, our role, in essence, we obtained permission, you know, we registered as a political party, you know, we are a political movement that's recognized in the country. So, but our participation was based on the fact that we cannot participate in a process that is fraudulent, that is just meant to deceive the people.
Yeah.
So our participation in the election was to raise the understanding of the people around these issues and to push a democratic, you know, program that seeks to address some of these inadequacies within the political process itself.
Huh. Now, in the APs, in the election, the All People's Congress came out as the victor. Can you explain to our listeners what the political climate has been as a result?
Okay, the political situation in Sierra Leone, just as it is in West Africa, is a very volatile, you know, situation. It is made worse by the fact that the region for the past 15 years has served as a battleground for imperialist nations and their various multinational corporations who are fighting to control our resources. So what that means is that most of the political parties you see in most of these West African states, including Sierra Leone, are just factions of a middle class that has controlled political power, you know, for the last 47 years or so. And this is made up of a group of the most dishonest, insincere, you know, sellouts that you may think of. Huh. And these are people who have used and they see political power as an instrument to enrich themselves and their own families. So what that means is that the political formation of the country itself was based on dishonesty. You know, it arose out of the British, you know, treacherous situation that, you know, in 1947, I think I need to explain that. Because historically, you know, if you want to understand the current dynamics, you need to look at the process that led towards the formation of political parties in Sierra Leone. Hmm. You know, Sierra Leone, of course, you know, is a British, was colonized by England.
Yes.
And it is still colonized by England.
Yes.
So what happened was that, you know, the British, after the so-called abolition of the slave trade, the British took, you know, most of the Africans from here to Sierra Leone, and they set up what they call a colony for freed slaves. So the intention was to use these Africans as an instrument to colonize almost the rest of what became known as British West Africa. So they had a separate, after 1896, there was two administrations in Sierra Leone, one for the colony, that is for Freetown, and another for the protectorate or the hinterlands for the rest of the country in the regions. So you have two groups, you know, developing. You know, the Africans in the colony, we are separated from the Africans in the provincial part of the country. So, but in 1898, there was a rebellion that the British thought that the rebellion was incited by what became known as the Creole. You know, these are the descendants of the Africans that were taken back.
Yes.
So after that, the British became afraid of the Creole, and they adopted a policy of excluding the Creole from direct participation in governance.
Hmm.
And from 1910 up to 1947, we saw the removal of the Creole in most of the, you know, positions within the colonial administration. And the anti-colonial movement itself was fought by the Creole in the colony. So the 1947 Stevenson proposal of the constitution that the British adopted immediately after, you know, 2 years after the end of the imperialist war, second imperialist war, was meant to transfer power to the conservatives who they had trained in the colony. I mean in the protectorate, that is the provincial part of the country. So it was the conservatives from the protectorate that formed what became known as the Sierra Leone People's Party, in opposition to the African Liberation Movement that had developed in the colony, led by Wallace Johnson. So you see, because for the rest of the time, before even on the eve of the so-called Second Imperialist War, Wallace Johnson was kept in prison, and the West African Youth League, which was the first organization in West Africa that demanded total independence from the British, you know, was disarmed. So you find out that the SLPP itself was a political party that came out of the British, you know, imperialist tendency to transfer political power, you know, to neo-colonialists. And in subsequent to that, there was, in 1957, there was, you know, a serious crisis between the leaders of the SLPP that resulted into a split within the party. And in 1960, during the Constitutional Conference in London, they disagreed further because Shaker Stevens, who was SLPP, objected to the fact that the British wanted to maintain a military base in Freetown after the so-called Declaration of Independence. Hmm. So they formed what then became known as the Election Before Independence Movement. The purpose of the Election Before Independence Movement was to have an election, you know, before the Declaration of Independence, so-called Declaration of Independence. And what that means is that if an election was organized, the SLPP would lose. And if the SLPP would have lost the election, the Creole would have taken power. And the Creole coming to power would mean that progressive forces have taken power. So the British refused to allow the elections, and the Election Before Independence Movement was transformed into what then became known today as the All People's Congress, or the APC. So the APC itself is a child of the SLPP, because it was the crisis among the leaders of the SLPP that resulted in the formation of the APC. So you find out that these are, you know, groups, you know, that belong to, they are factions of the same, you know, class of individuals that have been in power for, like I said, for the last 47 years. So from 1961 up to this point, power has been transferred from the SLPP to the APC and from the APC to the SLPP. So you see, so that has been the situation, you know. So for the last 10 years, or from 1996 up to 2007, the SLPP was in power. And now everybody became frustrated with SLPP, and they attributed the problems of the country to the SLPP. So the general feeling was that among some of the masses, you know, in Sierra Leone, is that the problems of electricity, you know, the lack of social services, is the result of, you know, the inefficiency of the SLPP. And they feel that by voting in the APC, it will bring in some kind of transformation. And this is I know these are some of the issues that we discussed, you know, that we pointed out. But what I'm trying to say is that there's not going to be any significant change, you know, in terms of policies that will transform the country. So in essence, the victory of the APC is not based on the fact that it provided a program for the masses, but within the current political situation, it appears to be the lesser of two evils.
Yes.
So that is why it was chosen. So it does not, and the imperialists knew that if they had insisted on the SLPP being in power, it would have automatically translated into a popular revolt. So that is why power was shifted from the SLPP to the APC. But it would not surprise you that even now you find out that the current APC is going to appoint some of the SLPP ministers SLPP members as ministers in the new government. Because that has always been the case.
Yes.
We call them, you know, wipers. You know what they call windscreen wipers?
Windscreen wipers.
So those are the kinds of, politicians that we have in the country. So I think this gives you an understanding of what the SLPP and the APC is. In fact, all the political parties that participated in the elections, including the PMDC itself, you know, came out of power struggle within the existing political parties. So they are basically two dominant political parties in the country, the APC and SLPP, and power has been shifted from one group to another during the last 47 years or so.
Now, you talked about the fact that it's been pretty much the APC and the SLPP switching off in power. And see, you know, some people get the idea that with APC going into power that it means change. Can you say something about the conditions that Africans faced under the APC in power before?
Well, people who see the APC as, you know, a party that is going to transform the conditions of the people perhaps are not historically informed of what has happened, you know, or they are not historically informed about the political situation in Sierra Leone.
Yes.
Because like I have indicated, the emergence of the SLPP, the APC itself, is based on a split within the SLPP. So if the SLPP does not perform, you do not expect, you know, the offspring of the SLPP to perform.
Right.
So the APC being an offspring of the SLPP means that it will carry on the same mess that the previous party, you know, has been doing.
Yes.
In fact, the SLPP was in power from 1952 to 1967, when an election was organized that resulted into controversy, and then it led to the first military coup. And from 1968, following the Dove Edwin Commission of Inquiry that ruled that the APC won the election, there was a counter coup that resulted in the APC, you know, being in power from 1968 up to 1992, when the APC itself was overthrown. So you find out that the APC is the party that has presided over the country more than any other party, regardless of the fact that it was a party that came out of the SLPP.
Yes.
So if you look, we are talking about 1961, that they will tend to refer to as the date or the year of independence. Up to now is about 47 years. And much of it, or maybe half of that, or more than half of that period, was predominantly, you know, ruled by the APC, the All People's Congress. So, and what the APC did was that it tampered with the constitution, and it created, you know, in the 60s and the 70s, right up to the 80s, a situation where there will only be one political party in the country. And that was in 1978. The APC transformed the constitution from a multi-party constitution to a one-party constitution. And at the time, there was nothing like freedom of expression. There was nothing like free speech. And this was a period when political terror, all forms of oppression, you know, of silencing political opponents. So many people were killed by the APC that today people do not even know the amount of people who lost their lives as a consequence of that particular situation, that tyrannic situation. In fact, people blame the APC for the fact that the war resulted from the oppressive tendencies of the APC at the time. So you see, so what we are talking about is that the APC has, you know, during the political campaign, it raised a slogan that it is coming back to power with a fresh group of people.
Yes.
You know, that the previous APC in the 60s and 70s is different from the current APC. But it's a lie. Because the people who are currently in government, or who are the leaders of the APC, we are the ones who were in power during the 60s, the 70s, right up to the 80s. And they have not changed. These are people whose minds and whose, you know, conclusions have not changed, and who still see political power as a means to enrich themselves and their families, to change their own immediate material conditions. So we do not expect the APC to do, you know, anything better than the SLPP, than the previous government. So in essence, if there's going to be any change, it is going to be a change that will worsen the conditions more than we are currently experiencing them. So in essence, people should not expect the APC to do anything. In fact, during his inaugural speech, the current leader, or the new president, has said that he is not going to be able to give electricity, that to put the lights on, for the next 36 months, that is the next 3 years, meaning that the government will not be able to perform for the next 3 years. So which means that people did not want the APC, or what they want is a change in their own conditions.
Yes.
They need electricity.
Yes.
They need water supply. They need good roads. You know, they need social services that will change their own conditions. We have a situation where three of every woman who give birth in Sierra Leone are likely to die in labor. We have a situation where there are no good roads, where people struggle in order to get a single meal a day. We have a situation where there is no democratic space. There are laws that prevent people from associating, from building a political program, from, you know, basic democratic rights are absent. So the APC itself is known for its activities for its tendency to even transform the country again into a one-party dictatorship. In fact, some of the leaders are saying that they will remain in power for the next 30 years. So we are heading for a situation where there will be limited democratic space, where it is going to be very, very difficult to even, you know, to openly criticize what's happening, or to say exactly, you know, what is hurting the people. So this is the tendency of the APC, and people who tend to look at APC as, you know, a party that is going to reform or change the conditions, like I said, are people who have forgotten what the APC did in the past. This does not mean that the SLPP is better than the APC. Like I said, they are all factions of the same group of individuals that are puppets of the imperialist. You know, you have to understand that this political situation in Sierra Leone is not controlled by the people who are, you know, appearing on the TV and who are talking on the radio as the leaders of the country.
Yes.
These are neo-colonialists. They are stooges of the imperialists. These are people who protect the interests of the British and the Americans, the United States government. These are the people who are giving mining concessions to corporations like Branch Energy, which is a mercenary corporation owned by the British. These are people who have given out the most lucrative mining concessions to corporations like the Sierra Leone Diamond Company, that is equally owned by the British. These are the people who have signed agreement with numerous other, who have given mining concessions with numerous other corporations owned by the US, the British, and the numerous European governments, and they are looting the resources of the people, and people do not have access to their own resources. In Kono, the people live without electricity. They live without good roads. You know, the children in Kono work in the mines, and they are being paid by the corporations 30 cents a day. So these are the objective conditions that need to be changed. This is only when the people have a program that addresses some of these issues that we expect that there is going to be change in the conditions of the people. And we do not expect this particular situation to be changed through the current political process, the conventional political process, because, like I pointed out earlier, the electoral laws are ones that are fraudulent. You know, the laws prevent the people, you know, from participation in the daily, you know, affairs of the country. So you do not expect a group like that that refuses people the right to participate in governance to solve the conditions of the people. So that is what we have to understand. These are the basic realities.
Yes. Now, you were just talking about how the SLPP government made deals with, like, the British and whatnot to keep themselves in power. What do you anticipate the APC's victory meaning for the relationship with specific imperialists like the British, who maintained, you know, the SLPP?
Well, the imperialists made sure that the APC wins the election because they knew that everybody was fed up with the SLPP, because the policies of the SLPP, the nature and manner in which the SLPP gave out mining concessions was open to everyone. So it does not require somebody to be, you know, conscious enough to even see, you know, the nature of the treasury or how the country was being sold out by the previous government. So what that means is that they are under those conditions. The imperialists, the British and the United States government, knew that if they had insisted on the SLPP being in power, then they would have lost, you know, their interest, or it would lead to a popular, you know, it would have made it more difficult for them. So that is why, even following the conclusion of the elections, some of the SLPP leaders accused the British, the Americans, and the various multinational corporations who are currently looting the resources of having rigged the election in favor of the opposition, the APC. So you see, they had even threatened that they would not allow what they called international conspirators to go away with, you know, that particular situation. But a deal was organized because there were several meetings, that closed-door meetings that were held between the SLPP and the APC, you know, chaired by the U.S. embassies, the British ambassador, and all that. So you find out that the imperialists, you know, were able to win the other group to accept that this is a deal. So it was done, the APC's victory was made, you know, possible by the imperialists because they needed to stabilize their own interest.
Yes.
So which means that the APC will continue the policies of the previous government in terms of giving away the extractive sector of the economy to the corporations who are currently looting the resources. In fact, the current vice president is somebody that comes from Kono. He was born in Kono, and he is a major shareholder in one of the corporations called the Sierra Leone Diamond Company. This is a corporation that is owned by the British. So you see the situation. It was a way of protecting the interests of the imperialists, and we expect the APC to give more concessions to various other corporations. In fact, during his inaugural speech, the new president or the leader of the APC said they are going to run the country like a private enterprise. So that tells you exactly, you know, what they are about to do. And worst of all, you must have heard how the United Nations, the the U.S. government officials have been calling for this for support of the new government. Even Jesse Jackson himself gave out a statement calling on the U.S. government to offer his support, offer their support to the new government. So you see, so that is a government that's imposed on us by the imperialists. And it is not different from the SLPP. The only difference is because now we have a, what they would tend to refer to as a different party, but it's a faction, like I said, of the same group of individuals who have controlled political power and have used it against the interests of the masses.
So what is the current program of the Africanist movement?
Like I mentioned earlier, we prior to the elections, the Africanist movement was able to build a coalition. The Africanist movement campaign coalition was one that was in response to the inadequacies of the current political process in Sierra Leone, and one that is in conjunction with our efforts to fight for the liberation and unification of the Africans in Sierra Leone and Africans everywhere in the world. So we developed, out of that process, a national democratic revolutionary program that, like I said, called for, among other things, the seizure of the economy by the masses, you know, the a government of the workers and peasants, you know, the restructuring of the military, you know, and various other issues that has to do with socioeconomic transformation that will change, you know, the immediate conditions that the people are faced with. So this National Democratic Revolutionary Program is being advanced in conjunction with the work of the African Socialist International. So we are able to hold series of meetings and campaigns to raise the understanding of the people during the election process and to point out that it is only through in this program, the program that addresses some of the issues that I've already explained, you know, that the masses of our people will be able to free themselves from the conditions that have been imposed on us by, you know, the forces of imperialism and its agents in Sierra Leone. So currently the National Democratic Revolutionary Program itself is one that is being received by the masses. Like I said, it is taken, you know, to community level. It has been discussed by people from various sectors of the population, and we think that it will have far-reaching impacts on the current political dynamics in the country, and it's even threatening the ability of the middle class, you know, to continue to hold on to power and to use political power as an instrument to enslave and oppress our people.
Now, I want to go back just briefly to the coalition itself. What kind of organizations, what kind of forces do you have participating in the coalition?
Well, in Sierra Leone, we were able to win the participation of organizations that represent almost every sector of the population. And that includes community-based organizations that are directly in touch with the communities, the community leaders, and organizations that are, you know, workers' organizations. For instance, we have the Passengers Welfare Organization, which is one of the most dynamic organizations in Sierra Leone that is campaigning for the welfare and protection of individuals who use buses and pedestrians. You know, it's a different situation in Sierra Leone because the rights of people, you know, who use transport are being violated because there is nothing like an organized transport facility. So you have private individuals who control transportation because they have buses. And quite often, they are notorious of raising prices, transportation fares, and all that. So the Passenger Welfare Organization has been doing tremendous work in terms of campaigning on behalf of our people, protecting the rights of people, of passengers. So this is one of the organizations as well. We have student union, you know, groups that are equally part of this organization. We have youth advocacy organizations in West Africa. Majority of the population are predominantly what they will refer to as youths, people below the ages of 36. So we find out that these are the target groups, you know. So the 40 organizations comprising various sectors of the population that can be defined as progressive or democratic forces who we think, you know, are crucial in the ongoing political process in the country. So some of them as well include, you know, non-commissioned officers, you know, junior members of the police who are equally being oppressed or affected by this situation, who are not being paid by the regimes, you know. So you have a whole dynamic situation that's happening. So we are hoping that the program, we are working on strategies to broaden the scope and the composition of the size and the scope of the coalition to include as many progressive and democratic forces as possible.
Now, with the National Democratic Program that the Africanist movement has put forth, what kind of impact has it had on the region?
Well, like I told you, this is a program that has implications for the neocolonial regimes, not only in Sierra Leone, but throughout West Africa.
Yes.
You know, for the very first time in the political history of that country since what they would tend to refer to as since independence, the masses of our people were presented with a program that addresses directly their own concerns and their interests.
Yes.
So they see for the very first time an organization that is working to accomplish their own interest. So they are compelled by that situation to accept this particular program and work assiduously for its own success. So the for the very first time again, you have a situation where the political elite, the corrupt middle class that has viewed political power as an instrument to oppress and enslave our people and enrich themselves and their families, we are faced with a situation where, you know, they were challenged, because for the very first time they have to come in contact with a program that exposes, you know, their own treacherous tendency.
Yes.
So it is a program, on the one hand, that addresses the needs and aspirations of our people and offers them hope for the future, and as well a program that exposes the treacherous tendencies of a group of individuals that are responsible, you know, for our own misery. So this is a true, you know, way situation. So like I said, it is a program that will have far-reaching consequences, you know, for the middle class, and one that will offer hope to our people for the future. So we expect that this is a program that as well we will be able to duplicate in other areas of the African world that we think, you know, masses of our people are engaged in struggle to transform our own conditions. Key to this National Democratic Revolutionary Program is that it empowers the masses, you know, in preparation to take power, in their own interest. So you see, so it one that lays the blueprint towards the ascension of the African working class and the peasants to power. So it is something like a blueprint towards the emancipation of the people.
We're going to take a short break here and return with more of the interview with Comrade Chernow Alpha Mba, the director of the Africanist Movement.
Giving crackers all the oil in our area. When you look at all the poverty in Africa, it's cause the scavengers eating the flesh, bleeding her to death. Now she trapped in a Shell gas station. They take vacations with our petrol. We living in the ghetto. They tell you not to get yours, just be satisfied to sell dope. I meet Kabila, the so-called president of Congo. Uncle Tom's like him is why we all poor. He letting thieves touch our motherland's contours. We deal with them like the white folks he follows. We getting robbed for more than a paycheck. If we was free, we wouldn't even have to pay rent. Be patient, how can I sit back and let my Africans die? A motherland's in disaster. I rubber gold and her oars in the hands of them bastards. They still want us howling master. They lift them niggas act up, calling forces for the backup. Our natural
resources jacked up. I mean the deep in the pockets that a white man rock for. Now put them up, Uncle Sam, come and fight fair. Coming to the land should have been a crocker's nightmare. But you're coming with your government and gunmen. All our resources turn into your funds and Africans can't get none. 30 cents in a day, rude boy, bring them big guns. Cause Africans gon' ride. No apologies in the end, comrades, let's ride. She belongs to you. Why are Africans so poor? You can't blame it on the youth. You see, the vampire, he never tells the truth. Africa is for all Africans. She belongs to you.
Socialist Party Chairman Omali Yeshitela's new book, One Africa, One Nation, is available now. In this historic collection, the chairman and representatives of the emerging African Socialist International explain why Africa and all its resources must be liberated and in the hands of African workers and peasants in Africa and everywhere. The chairman's new book, One Africa, One Nation, documents the process of building the African Socialist International, which is rapidly growing in countries throughout Africa and in the US, the Caribbean, and elsewhere around the world. For pictures of the chairman's recent book signing tour, and to order your copy of One Africa, One Nation, go to burningspearuhuru.com. That's www.burningspearuhuru.com.
Africa.
Stay in business 24/7 because it's a setting up trap for us. We don't
gonna slip for them pretty face dimes. Throw ass at us. Taking a stride, even the baddest chicken wear a wire. You got Asians approaching you from every angle, trying to get you tangled and twisted. But everything we do, stay explicit. Mistake, we'll try to say we trafficking drugs, taking our right to havoc, girl. We still Goombas, still Goombas, sons and daughters, cause they the future, so they can shoot you today. Another generation to rise from the roots like Goombas. And we've been through the worst torture up in Harlem, and Haiti, and London, and Mother Africa. We all starving, so we all ballin'. A revolution, we gon' spark it. We reach farther and keep dropping science till we martyrs. To live and die for the people, we be honored. Even struggle might be hard, but we harder. That's why
it's hard living this life as a rebel. It's hard living this life as a rebel. It's hard living this life as a rebel. It's hard living this life as a rebel.
Aluminum, coal, tan, diamonds, oil, and a gold.
Now you know
that we know,
that we know.
Organizing is the king.
One touch,
from Dirty Sam to the queen,
to the queen.
Keep your paws off the box site and get it grown a creed now. And stop yelling, not ye, not a we now. Kabuja Neo colonists, a new appointed president.
Here I go.
So you can call me a rebel, a rebel.
It was burning in the gin,
but the birds in the bird.
Oh,
it ain't no way to beat the cell to this.
Comrade Cherno,
got them soldiers on go.
Here I go.
I like to study, yes, your tier list.
Could you break that down for me, sir?
I study history and realism. Real when it's real, we should deal with it.
From
the stairs to the block,
to Africa,
we should feel with
Africa.
It.
But the 67 won't do with nothing but studying Bibles. And Katherine Johnson was 92 at the time of the cops' arrival. If you living in black, survival ain't an item you got a right to. That's right, dude. You have some sense, you wanna stand up and fight too. Surprise you, mess around and get an example made out of you. Mind of your own business and them cops make you a pinata. See a lot of dudes get shook up and get the slackest. But I had to choose to put them books up and get the action. I'm asking, are you a good slave or the bad one? Do you bust backwards or backwards? The master putting them lashes on your back. See, I'm that last one, that bad one. That one you see when the master's house is burning, pouring the gas and rot when that turtle, yeah. But that's the
whoa, whoa.
Fast forward some 100 years in time. Now we ride with yes and tell it, never stop. I mean, yeah, life as a rebel can be hard sometimes, but it's even harder for a slave that can't make up his mind to fight.
It's hard living this life as a rebel. 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 It's hard living this life as a rebel.
Hey man, ain't nobody ever got free without fighting to get free. Fight, you know what I'm saying? Everybody who can't fight needs to stand up and fight. And anybody who can't stand up and fight needs to support those who are standing up to fight for our freedom. You know what I'm saying? And anybody who is free already, hey, you need to stand with folks who ain't free. Make this thing happen, y'all. We gotta get out of this thing.
Welcome back to Africa Live on WhoRadio.com. Your host, Nibinga Zimbabwe, and we've been playing an interview that I had the opportunity to do on last week with Comrade Cherno Alpha Mba, the director of the Africanist Movement in West Africa. We're about to go ahead and continue with that interview. I want to let folks know that this is not the only interview that we did over the past week. We also did an interview with Comrade Mfanelo Squatsha, who is the executive secretary of the Pan-Africanist Congress of Azania, based in what is known right now still by the colonial name South Africa. So we're going to be playing that interview next week. But now we'll go ahead and continue with this interview with Comrade Cherno Alpha Mba. So, Comrade, based on the fact that that the Africanist movement has put forth this National Democratic Revolutionary Program, what do you anticipate happening from this?
Well, I think that, like I told you, the masses of our people in Sierra Leone are in motion. So the National Democratic Revolutionary Program put forward by the Africanist movement is a response to this dynamic situation. So this should serve to indicate that, you know, the people are in preparation towards taking political power in their own hands. So the National Democratic Revolutionary Program is one that informs us of, you know, the roadmap to power, that gives us a roadmap to power. So what we anticipate is the fact that the APC, you know, within the shortest possible time, is going to prove to the masses that it is incapable of solving their own situation. And what that will have very serious implications, because in the Africanist movement, we see the previous elections, perhaps, or we believe that they are going to be the last, you know, for a couple of time, because if the APC fails to provide the immediate solutions to the problems experienced by our people, which they will fail to do, which they will not be able to provide, then it means that the masses will completely lose confidence in the electoral process. And if they lose confidence in that particular process, they will definitely, you know, take on an alternative. And this is where the National Democratic Revolutionary Program comes in. Yes. And already, they are already. Starting to say that if the APC does not change the conditions that they are experiencing, they are going to remove them from power. So you see that the masses are already prepared, you know, to take power in their own hands, to solve their own problems by themselves.
Yes.
And the good thing about the National Democratic Revolutionary Program is that it provides leadership and direction towards that particular struggle.
Yes.
So in order for it not to become a chaotic struggle or a situation that will be manipulated by the middle class as well, we now have a program that speaks for the people and one that lays the plan towards the accomplishment of the desires and aspirations of the people. So what we anticipate is that there is going to be a popular movement that will immediately, you know, solve the conditions that we experience in that part of the continent. And we believe that it is going to serve as an inspiration for other Africans in other parts of the world, you know, as well. Because we think that the struggle that's happening in Sierra Leone, and we believe that the struggle that we are involved in is not one that is limited to, you know, Africans in Sierra Leone alone. It is one that is part of our general struggle for African independence.
Yes.
So it is one that has serious implications for the emancipation of our people in any part of the world.
Yes.
And we feel that African revolutionaries, progressives, you know, around the world, or Africanists around the world, should have a responsibility of understanding the dynamic situation in West Africa, and that the aspirations of our people in that part of the continent to move ahead, you know, by themselves, to change the conditions that we experience. And that when that happens, it is going to create the opportunity for us to liberate, to further liberate, you know, unify our people in all parts of the world. So that is going to be the situation, and that is what we anticipate.
Now, I'd like to move a little bit because you talk about people in motion, and it makes me think about the situation in Guinea-Conakry. And before we go into what's currently happening in Guinea-Conakry, can you give people a bit of background about what has recently happened with the popular rebellion that happened there?
Well, the Guinea situation, I believe, should not be something that is, you know, strange to people right now, especially if they have been listening to the Uhuru radio. and if they are in touch with Uhuru News. Because much of the information that was being distributed in places across the U.S. and across the world was one that was done by the African Socialist International. And throughout the process of the rebellion, the Uhuru News, and specifically Uhuru Radio, was relaying, you know, the voice of the people on the ground. You know, so I don't expect people to be unaware of what happened in Guinea or what's happening in Guinea. But for those who might not be aware, I think the rebellion that happened in Guinea in January and February early, you know, this year, was one that was in response to the harsh conditions that resulted from over two decades of neo-colonial state oppression, the monopoly of the bauxite and iron ore reserves in Guinea by North American corporations, specifically in this case, Alcoa and Alcan, you know, that are owned by the United States and Canada. And as well, you know, the development of a political mafia that survives from, you know, exploitation and oppression of the masses. So you, historically, Guinea-Conakry served as a center of the African liberation movement during the 60s and 70s. And at the time, we had a progressive government led by Ahmed Sékou Touré. So between 66 to 1975, up to 1984, you know, we have a situation where most of the liberation movements, including the PAIGC, the party for the African Party for the Independence of Guinea-Bissau and Cape Verde, led by Amilcar Cabral, had its headquarters in Guinea-Conakry. And we had a situation where Kwame Nkrumah, after the coup that overthrew him, he was in Guinea-Conakry. He was even made a co-president by Ahmed Sékou Touré. So most of the leaders of the Pan-African Congress of Azania, for example, we have been trained in Guinea-Conakry. So Guinea-Conakry was the center at the time of the African Liberation Movement.
Yes.
So within that period, we saw how the imperialists struggled to overthrow the progressive government of Guinea. And in 1970, we saw a Portuguese-led imperialist attack against the government of Guinea. And within that period, the masses of African people in Guinea came up in defense of the progressive government led by Ahmed Sékou Touré. But unfortunately, following the death of Sékou Touré in 1984, the Democratic Party of Guinea, which was a progressive party that was in power, the party of Sékou Touré, was overthrown by the military in a coup sponsored by the United States and France. And that situation resulted in the imposition of General Lansana Conté in power. So from 1984 up to this point, what we have in Guinea is the imposition of neo-colonial, you know, regimes that do not represent the interests of the people. And part of the arrangement was that the United States and France and the various other European nations, we are prepared to support the government in Guinea to build a sophisticated military that will suppress, you know, the aspirations of the people and keep them down, whilst corporations like Alcoa and Alcan continue to loot the aluminum, the bauxite, the iron ore, and other resources from Guinea-Conakry. So I know that, you know, consumer brands like Reynolds Wrap, you know, some of those consumer brands are ones that are being produced from the aluminum that is being exploited by the leading North American corporations in Guinea. In 1986, the United States and France influenced the Guinean government to transform, you know, the economy to give away the economy to these North American corporations. And they enacted the Mining Code of 1986. Which, among other things, allowed the North American corporations unfettered access and control over the resources. You know, I'm talking about aluminum, bauxite, and, you know, gold, or whatever resources that you find in Guinea.
Yes.
So from 1986 up to this period, the aluminum resources in Guinea were dominated by the two leading North American corporations that I've just mentioned. So the American government, or the U.S. government, took upon the responsibility of providing training for the Guinean military, of offering arms and ammunition to the Guinean military to protect the regime. So you have a situation where the military became rich, senior officers within the army became extremely rich based on this corrupt syndicate. So, but what happened was that in 2003, we witnessed a shift in relations between Conte and the United States, because, you know, out of the policies that came out of the 1986 mining code was that there should be a national geological survey to identify strategic areas where resources are located. And that created a situation where the Guinean Ministry of Mines and Geological Survey had a database of all the areas in the country where strategic resources are located. So the we have one of these areas include Sangaredi, which is in the far north of the country. So this is a lucrative aluminum, you know, or bauxite concentrated area. The U.S. has been struggling to get this area. Yes. And in 2003, the Guinean government gave a Japanese corporation called GAPCO, the Global Aluminum Production Corporation. And the agreement signed between GAPCO and the Guinean government gave GAPCO, the Japanese, a 100 years mining concession. So this annoyed the United States. And eventually, the United States from 2003 has adopted a policy of trying to overthrow the government of Guinea in order to take over this mining concession from the Japanese. So what happened was that series of, you know, a program was developed by the United States called a regime change agenda that first targeted the opposition parties, but it failed, and it could not work with the military because the military are more loyal to the regime, because they see the regime as a way, you know, if contest in power, that means that they will continue to survive from the corrupt syndicate that has developed, you know, out of that particular situation that was created by the U.S. So they could not overthrow the government. So this was when, after realizing that the opposition could not overthrow the government and the military as well, that they concentrated efforts on the civil society movement and the trade union leadership. So we find out that between 2003 up to January last year, the United States government, through the embassy in Conakry, had spent something like $13 million to develop the capacity of the trade union movement and a section of civil society movement in preparation for a rebellion that will result in the imposition of a government that represents the interests of the United States. So our role in that process was to transform that particular situation, you know, into one that will result in the protection of the interests of the masses. So in essence, or in brief, the rebellion that happened in Guinea in early this year was one that was in response to the exploitation of the resources by the two leading North American corporations, the neo-colonial state of exploitation, and the determination of the masses to overthrow a neo-colonial regime that is responsible for the miserable conditions that we experience in that area as well.
So what kind of motion is happening in the Guinea-Conakry now at this point? And who are the forces at play?
Well, the unfortunate thing that happened, like I said, there were so many forces at play during the rebellion. You know, on the one hand, you have the Africanist movement and a section of the civil society movement itself that appeared to be progressive. You know, who we are working with the Africanist movement to fight, you know, for the control of the economy by the people and the input and the overthrow of the new colonial regime. And on the other hand, you had the trade union leadership, which was working under the directives, you know, of the U.S. embassy in Conakry, and some of the other middle class organizations, the opposition parties, who we are trying to accomplish the so-called regime change agenda as advanced by the United States. So what happened was that a deal was brokered by the rebellion itself was met with serious, you know, repression by the Guinean military. And up to this point, we do not know exactly the amount of people that were brutally killed by the Guinean army, you know, in their effort to put down the rebellion. What we know from earlier statistics is that over 500 people were killed, although the imperialist media deliberately distorted the figures and distorted the facts and presented the situation as if 100 people died. You know, so what we have now in Guinea is that following the repression, a new prime minister was imposed as one that, you know, represents the struggle, or the one that is the outcome of the struggle. But it's a lie. You know, the imposition of Lansana Kouyaté as the new Prime Minister of Guinea is one that came out of the middle class settlement that was made between the trade union leadership and a section of civil society movement who we are working as instruments of the United States, the French, and some of the imperialist nations and their corporations in order to protect their mining interests in Guinea. So the government that is in Guinea right now is not a consensus government, and it is not the product of the mass uprising that happened in January and February this year. So in essence, right now we have a government that is imposed on the people in Guinea-Conakry, and one that is yet to control or exercise its control over the country, because we should not forget that during the rebellion, most of the buildings, the administrative headquarters in the provincial parts of the country, the police stations, the prisons, were all destroyed by the masses. So what that means is that 70% of the country is currently not administered by the government in Conakry. And even in Conakry, the government could not consolidate its control, because almost we have two governments, because Conte still remains as the president of the country, and you have a new different prime minister. The prime minister has his own government, and there are old ministers who worked with Conte who are on a different side with the president. So you have two governments in Conakry, and one, the new prime minister himself, faces the threat of being overthrown by the military as well. So, and there are the masses on the other hand who are still in control of certain areas of the country that do not have government presence. So this is the situation. So few months ago, the Prime Minister came to Washington D.C. and he appealed to the U.S. government in order for them to send a military force in Guinea in order to provide protection for the government. And part of their plan is to have an election organized in December that they are going to rig in order to legitimize this particular treacherous process. So you see. So this is the situation as it stands right now.
What is the Africanist movement's program to affect the situation in Guinea?
Well, like I said, we played a key role in that particular rebellion.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, the discussion around the uprising was one that was started by the Africanist movement during our Africanist Leadership Conference that was held in Dalabas between November and December last year. During that conference, we were able to bring together all these trade union movements and civil society organizations. Our intention was to develop a common coalition that was to, lead the masses towards a process of transformation. By this we mean a revolutionary transformation.
Yes.
So, but we did not understand at the time that some of these forces represent different interests.
Yes.
So, in the process, it became chaotic. But we were able, in our own efforts to provide the masses with a national democratic revolutionary program, just as we did recently in Sierra Leone. And among other things, this program called for, the right of the masses to put in place a government of workers and peasants, and the restructuring of the armed forces, the dismantling of the borders, reparations to the people for the wealth stolen by these corporations, among other things, freedom of press. So these are the issues that were raised by the African movement, program in Guinea. And like I said, almost by the time the Guinean military had hired in mercenaries from different parts of the region to contain the situation in Guinea, the African movement was almost in control of most parts of the country. And up to this point, there is even a report among the government officials in Guinea that the situation in Guinea became volatile because of the involvement of the African movement. And they ruled out categorically that the presence or the involvement of the Africanist movement and the presence of radical ideology, what they call radical ideology among the youths, is as a result of what they are now referring to as the presence of a leftist youth, radical leftist youth organization, specifically the Africanist movement in the region. So it means that the National Democratic Revolutionary Program, as put forward by the Africanist movement, had immediate effects on the situation in Guinea-Conakry. And up to this point, it is a factor that is still being considered by the middle class opportunists that are functioning as stooges of the imperialists and the corporation, various corporations that are stealing the resources. So that is the program. And we are able to work In fact, in areas where we were present during the demonstration, there was nothing like looting. And what became known as violent against each other. But, you know, committees were able set up to man the affairs of the situation. The only structures that were affected were government buildings, which represented, you know, the oppression of the people. And these were buildings that were destroyed. So, and up to this point, the government is struggling to consolidate its own presence in those areas. We are talking about Labe, Daliban, all these other areas. Huh. So, the program itself, or the rebellion itself, happened because we initiated the discussion, you know, in our conference. And we were trying to develop a common program of action with various forces who we did not understand at the beginning. We are forces who represented different interests. Hmm. But we have learned, you know, very serious lessons from the Guinea situation that we think, you know, we are trying to address while dealing with other situations as well.
I want to commend the comrades working in that area for the great work that's been done there, and I think that that not only have you learned from the Guinea situation and will you learn from the Guinea situation, but I anticipate that the entire African liberation movement will learn from it. I'd like to ask, what do you anticipate happening there in Guinea in the near future?
Well, one thing we should always bear in mind is that the situation in Guinea-Conakry, as it is in Sierra Leone, is not an isolated situation.
Yes.
In fact, West Africa itself has a general tendency.
Yes.
You know, that is why when there is a situation in Sierra Leone that is developing, the governments within the region becomes, you know, threatened, and yes, it becomes an international issue, because West Africa is of strategic significance at this moment to the imperialist.
Yes.
And for the last 15 years, it has been transformed into a battleground for the, you know, by the various imperialist corporations who are scrambling day by day for the control of strategic resources in that region.
Yes.
And now you must have heard that the government in Liberia has offered the United States space to put down the African Command Center.
Yes.
In West Africa, you know. So these are all issues of very serious concern, and we have U.S. FBI. The U.S. FBI are in Freetown. The British government has a military base in Freetown, you know, and there are plans for the construction of the largest U.S. embassy, you know, second to Baghdad, in Ghana as well. So you see, so this is what makes West Africa at the moment very significant in terms of our struggle. And what we anticipate happening in West Africa, like I said, it is a situation that is dynamic, that is in motion. And we cannot stop the masses who are already in motion from their efforts to take control of state power and solve their own conditions.
Yes.
So our role right now is to provide leadership and direction towards that struggle.
Yes.
And that is what we have been doing, you know, by providing national democratic revolutionary programs as blueprints or roadmaps towards that particular process.
Yes.
You know, as the tactics and the strategies towards the accomplishment of that particular objective. But we anticipate, like I said, that, you know, this gives us an opportunity to redouble our efforts and our energies to take advantage of this situation, or to maximize the potentials and the possibilities we have that is presented to us by the dynamic situation in West Africa, to, you know, see how we can create the required base for us to be able to impact on the rest of the African world. So the West African situation is one that is not isolated, like I said.
Yes.
It's one that is part of the general struggle for the emancipation of our people, and one that has implications for the unification of African people all around the world. And I think it gives us the opportunity as Africans in the US, in England, or any place that we are located, to be tied to an active process that is designed towards the accomplishment of our objective. And that objective is the total liberation and unification of Africa and African people from the clutches of neo-colonialism and imperialism.
Yes.
And West Africa, at this moment, whether we agree, you know, or not, represent, from our own understanding, you know, a greater threat to the strategic interests of imperialism in Africa.
Yes.
So you see, and that is why the imperialists themselves are building, you know, constantly on the ground to make sure that the situation in West Africa is contained.
Yes.
Because it is very threatening, you know, to their interest, not only, you know, in West Africa, but throughout the world, because we should understand that the resources that the world has right now, you know, comes from Africa. And if this process in West Africa, you know, succeeds, then definitely it has implications for the interest of imperialism internationally.
That brings me to my next question, which is, how can Africans and other allies of ours in other places around the world participate or support what is happening there in West Africa?
Well, like I said, it's not an isolated situation. What is happening in West Africa is one that is being done in conjunction with the programs of the African Socialist International. And we believe that the struggles of our people in any part of the world has to be, you know, part of a universal program for the emancipation of our people. And we think that we cannot win, you know, based on our separate struggles that might happen in Sierra Leone or in Guinea or, you know, in South Africa or in different parts of the world or in the US. We think that it has to be inclusive and directed under an organization that shares the vision, the correct program for the emancipation, the unification and liberation of our people. So, which is why we think Africans around the world have a responsibility of trying to find out exactly how they can participate in this process. And by this I mean, you know, direct their energies and programs towards supporting the work to build the African Socialist International. So, because we need an organization that will be able to provide leadership for these struggles. And we think that it's the responsibility of Africans to participate in the dissemination of information around what's happening in Africa, so that the imperialist media will not be able to present a different picture, you know, of the situation in West Africa. And that is why we think the effort by the African People's Socialist Party to build an independent, you know, media institution for the African revolutionary movement itself is very tremendous. You know, I think our success as well have to be our ability to support programs like this, both materially and politically, and any form or way, any method or by any means necessary, to make sure that, you know, these efforts and programs are developed into a level or a stage that, you know, it can be recognizable and accessible to to our people, you know, all around the world. Because, you know, most people currently do not know exactly what is happening in the world.
Yes.
And without opportunities like this, it will be very difficult for people who are listening right now to be able to know exactly that this situation is happening. And if this is being done, it is not happening as a coincidence. It is happening as a consequence of a more wider international program.
Yes.
So that is why we think that, you know, people have a responsibility to contribute monies, to do whatever they can, you know, to give their support to this. I will not want to say solidarity, because Africans should not be in solidarity with the struggle of African people.
Yes.
It is our struggle. Yes. We have to be in unity with this struggle. We have to unite with this struggle. We have to fight together, live together, and succeed together, you know, and emerge victorious together. And other people who are friends of our struggle as well, who are not necessarily Africans, but who think that supporting the struggle of African people offers them an opportunity to stand on the right side of history as well, you know, this is an opportunity for them to be part of, you know, a dynamic process. Because we are confident of the fact that victory is surely ours.
Yes.
So if you become a passive participant in this process, then it means, you know, you do not understand the nature of this situation. And at the end of the day, you will definitely see victory coming, and, you know, you think it's something that has isolated you.
Yes.
So we don't want people to be isolated from this situation, and we think that it gives them the opportunity to be tied to an active and dynamic process.
Yes.
And we are not just talking about this situation, but we know exactly that we will definitely succeed. So we are calling on Africans and other people who are friends of our struggle to know exactly that this is our own, is a collective responsibility for us to be in unity with this process and support this particular process by any means.
So, comrade, I want to also ask, you know, around, throughout Africa, actually, the Chinese are challenging the relationships between U.S. and European imperialism and Africa. How is this process, this challenge by the Chinese impacting there in West Africa?
Well, I think this is a very, very unfortunate situation, because now you have a situation where some of the puppet governments in Africa themselves are looking at the Chinese as an alternative.
Hmm.
So I even remember that following the enactment of the China-Africa program and the convening of the China-Africa summit, and the Tijan Kaba was invited, and before he left, he made a statement on the national television saying that, you know, he liked the Chinese because the Chinese give aid without benchmarks, what they call without conditions,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to the US or, you know, some of the European countries. But we think that the Chinese are as dishonest as the Western imperialist.
Yes.
And that the China itself is now an imperialist nation. So the thing that the African Liberation Movement is faced with right now is the question of how are we going to face the Chinese? Because that's another phase of the struggle. This is equally as a difficult situation as the Arab question in Africa.
Yes.
So you see, so these are manifestations of the dynamic situations in the world as well. So these are the ramifications of the ongoing struggle among the imperialists themselves for control of the strategic resources in the world. You know that most of the resources, 90% of the resources or 95% of the resources that the world needs, from energy to from oil to different kinds of resources, comes from Africa. And now with the role of the Chinese, regardless of the fact that it threatens US imperialism, it as well threatens the existence of the African Liberation Movement. Because what that means is that we are now faced with an added responsibility. You know, we are faced with two powers. So the Chinese, even if the Chinese substitute the US in place like Sierra Leone right now, they are still an imperialist power. Like, you have a situation where the economic structures, some of the economic structures, like, you know, the areas of construction, production of goods like African fabric, are being duplicated by the Chinese. They have no respect for trade, what they call trademark policies. So you see, so it means that the African market is being flooded with substandard products, and what used to be African products themselves are now being duplicated by the Chinese and produced, you know, substandardly, and that undermines the indigenous African market itself. And besides, we are now hearing of talks by China to start up the establishment of military bases in the world. So you see, so you see that we are heading for a situation perhaps where Africa will become a battleground, not only between the African Liberation Movement and the imperialists, but among the imperialists themselves, just as it happened following the conclusion of the Berlin Conference.
Yes.
So you see, so what this presents to us is a challenge, you know. So I think, you know, those of us who are involved in the struggle for African independence have to sit and study the Chinese situation very skillfully, and then understand what are the dangers that China represents, apart from the economic situation alone. But what does it mean in terms of our struggle for the total liberation and unification of Africa? What does it mean in terms of our struggle with the Chinese? What does it mean in terms of the imagined role of China in the world? You know, and the talk and the fact that China is being looked at by some of the neo-colonial governments as an alternative, you know, to Western imperialism. So you see, so these are questions, these are difficult questions, I think, that needs to be discussed and answered more appropriately by those of us who are involved in the struggle, just as the Arab question itself is as difficult as you know, it has been.
Yes. Now, the Africanist movement, I understand, is having a conference sometime soon. Can you tell us about that?
Well, the Africanist movement in December 27 to 30, we'll be holding a conference called the Africanist Movement International Conference on Leadership. This is a program that started 3 years ago. The first conference was held in Sierra Leone, you know, in November to December 2005. And this is a conference that brought together Africans from Ghana, from Nigeria, from Liberia, from Guinea-Conakry, Sierra Leone, the US, and England. In fact, it commenced it served as the commencement of formal relations between the Africanist movement and the African People's Socialist Party. It was the period when Africanist movement leaders in West Africa voted, unanimously to be part of the process led by the APSP to build the African Socialist International. So this is a program that resulted from the annual general meetings resolution that we held in 2004, in which we ruled out that in order for us to involve, because we find out that much of the discussion about the unification and liberation of Africa is being done, is being held among individuals who do not represent the masses, and that within this process the masses themselves are completely excluded from the discussion, from these discussions and these programs. So we felt that in order for us to fully accomplish the process of unification and liberation, the masses, the workers, or what they tend to refer to as the grassroots communities, need to be involved in this process. They should not only be told about what is happening, but they should be active participants in this process. So the Africans Movement Leadership Conference itself is in response to some of these issues and concerns that we have raised. So we have held two successive conferences since 2004. The first one, like I said, happened in Makeni. That is why in most cases we take it to the heartland of the grassroots communities, where people can have access to it, rather than situations where it's, you know, like the OAU or AU meetings that have been held in the most, you know, powerful hotels, or, you know, where African leaders come and demonstrate the best suits and say the most eloquent speeches. This is a conference that is accessible to the masses of African people, and one that is held in their doorsteps. So you see, so subsequent to the Makeni conference, we held the 2006 conference in Guinea, because our plan is that this is a conference that should be replicated, you know, in every year it should be held in one of the countries.
Yes.
So you see, so that means that you have a situation where Africans will have, you know, come together in an active process, you know, to fight for the liberation and unification of the continent.
Yes.
So last year, as one of the issues, like I mentioned, that came out was the general program of action against the counter regime. So this year, we, because of the discussion that happened, we felt that the situation in Guinea-Conakry is incomplete.
Yes.
And now we needed to revisit the situation in Guinea and as well develop a common program of action for the entire West Africa.
Yes.
And some of the issues that we intend to discuss include cross-border extortion, the problems of multinational corporate exploitation in the region, the crisis situation that have resulted from, you know, the activities of imperialist nations in the region. And out of this, we hope that a sophisticated program of action that will automatically result, perhaps, you know, or at least in the empowering of the people towards the struggle for power, will be able to advance it. So, but due to considerations, we have found out that the Guinean regime has already started responding to the situation in Guinea. And because of that, we have concluded very recently that it should be held in Sierra Leone, you know. So we are hoping that the African Leadership Conference will happen in December in Kenema. That's the east of Sierra Leone. You know, it is still the stronghold of the former government in Sierra Leone, that's SLPP. So already we have received commitment from Africans from places like Burkina Faso, from places like Sudan. You know, in West Africa we have received commitments from different areas, including Guinea-Conakry, of course in Nigeria and various other places, who have expressed interest in attending this particular conference. We think that this conference is very crucial because this year as well marks the fifth anniversary of the Africanist movement. The Africanist movement has existed for 5 years since we returned from exile in Guinea-Conakry. Hmm. And we are trying to review our entire program and our activities in relation to the fastly changing situation in West Africa. Because we have understand that in order for us to be able to provide the leadership that is required by the masses, we need to revisit our current approach towards the situation in West Africa, and to be able to develop a program that will have the input of the masses as well. So we think that this is going to be one of the most significant conferences that has happened recently in West Africa, and one perhaps that will give us the ability to develop a program that will be able to reverse the conditions that we currently experience as a result of, you know, neo-colonialist and imperialist activities in the region.
We are coming to a close now, comrade. I want to say that I appreciate again the ability to interview you again and to have you in the studio once more. You know, the inadequacy of neocolonialism makes it kind of hard at times to do interviews with you from the continent, because, you know, the phone lines are bad and I think oftentimes there is some interference deliberately to prevent that from happening. But it's always great to have you in the studio whenever possible. I'd like to ask if there's anything in closing that you would like to say.
I would like to express appreciation to the Uhuru News, because we think that, you know, without this opportunity, it's very difficult for information like this to be said in the imperialist media. In fact, the most disturbing aspect of the situation in Africa is that much of the information that is coming from Africa is information that is provided by the imperialist media.
Yes.
And in most cases, this information is distorted, and the imperialist media itself, be it the CNN, the BBC, or whatever you may like to call it, is one that is part of the aggression of our people. So you cannot expect the aggressors to explain exactly the nature of the aggression that is being committed against our people. So we think that for a very long time, African people and other oppressed people around the world need, you know, a communication apparatus, you know, a communication mechanism that will allow us the ability to freely and independently express our views, our situation as they rightfully affects us, as they exactly affects us. So we think that for a very long time, we have been robbed of this particular opportunity. And what has happened over the years is that the imperialists, apart from the fact that they have military power, they have equally dominated instruments of mass communication. And in essence, we have no opportunity to have an independent medium of communication of our own. So we think the efforts made by the African People's Socialist Party to start an independent media institution of this nature is tremendously significant. And one that is not only significant, but is very important, and that will have implications for imperialism in general. Because people who are listening to this program right now will not have been able to hear what we are saying.
Yes.
But it has been made possible by this particular opportunity. So I think what we will say is that people should equally feel obliged by this situation to support the development of the Uhuru News, specifically the Uhuru Radio, to the capacity that it will be able to compete and defeat, you know, some of the media institutions that we currently admire.
Yes.
You know, that we think are institutions of high prestige, and they are not. So you see, so it is not about saying just, you know, we are in support of this situation, or we think you people are doing a wonderful job. It's about supporting that particular wonderful job to make it, you know, one that is, you know, sophisticated, and one that has the capacity of defeating our own opponents.
Yes.
You know, the struggle, the war over ideas, the war for information, access to information, is one that is crucial. You know, so I would like to commend the African People's Socialist Party for this effort, and to say that in the Africanist movement, we appreciate this particular opportunity being given to us, and we think that, you know, these are one of very few opportunities that we have to express, you know, our own situations to our people. And we are calling on our people as well, and other people who are listening to this program, who are friends of our struggle, to invest their energies and whatever resources they have into this particular process, because this is the future. And I think they have a responsibility, an obligation, you know, to this particular thing. Knowing or hearing what we are saying right now is not sufficient, you know, but knowing the responsibility that we have,
yes,
and the obligations that come with it is as important, more than the information that we are providing you. So we think you should start to think about ways and means to support this particular initiative. So I would like to thank you for that, and I would like to say this has been a wonderful opportunity for me. Thank you very much, comrade.
Uhuru. Uhuru.
How is it possible that people just die every day in a land so rich? What about them? What about them?
where you at?
My people's wild, we take them to the streets.
So where you at?
Organizing, man, this crisis is deep.
So where you at?
So we ain't seen you in a couple of weeks. Don't let them have y'all stand to speak. Raise up and fight to get free.
Where you at?
In the streets, to them gutters and alleys.
Now where you at?
The bus stops, barbershops and the traps.
But where you at?
At the rally, listening to
Chairman O'Malley.
From Guinea, Crone, to Greed, to Cali. Screams like powers, how you find? I used to be young and foolish, didn't know what to do with my life. But inside was a clue, the situation was ruined. If life is a game, then Africans, we had to be losing. That's when I went to school and came in contact with the movement. That's when I finally found out that I was an African. Wasn't no magic folks back when the crack and started to travel again. From back then up until right now, it's always fighting. Don't even think that we're settling down. No civil rights, man, get right, man. Every Africa is our lifeline. So now we're organized to win this thing in our lifetime. It's fight time, ding. Around the world, people's just bucking. And if you think that you gon' pray it away, then good luck, cause you gon' need it. In fact, you weed it a bit too much. This track is giving out nothing but beatings. And dude, that sucks. But while you duck and tell you what you need to look at the facts, ain't a people that got us some freedom without fighting back.
So where you at?
My people's wild, we take them to the streets.
So where you at?
We organize, man, this crisis is deep.
Where you at?
But we ain't seen you in the couple of weeks. Don't let them have y'all stand to speak. Raise up and fight to get free.
Where you at?
In the streets, chilling, gutters and alleys.
Now where you at?
The bus stops, barbershops and the traps.
But where you at?
At the rally, listening to Chairman O'Malley. From Guinea, Crone, to Greed, to Cali. Screams like powers, how you find?
You can find me in Southeast D.C. 5 minutes away from where George Bush and them stayed. Where they equip young Africans with AKs and CRACK to commit violence horizontally. But ironically, we bust back to philosophy. Now we looking for enemies, finding new use for Hennessy. Molotov ring a bell to me. Going to my seats, we getting free. Getting cheese, not a concern to me. Crack is hurting me. Trigonometry. Matter of fact, they scared of me. Cause I'm down for the people. What's bad for the people? If you're down with the beast, look down for your people. Black. Who is it? A true movement with a new vision. No who isn't bullshit. If we bullshit, the smooth niggas pull triggers for you snitches. Triggers for you, my comrades. You hear the Sierra Leone. I say these raps, ladies tracks, bring these gats. That's where we at. Where we at?
I see you crown. Okay, man.
How is it possible that people just die every day and they're so rich? What about them?
There's
no way logical with resources starting from the coal and aluminum and diamonds. What about them?
What about them?
If we each touch one, we can all touch all of the knives and forward this cause. Tell me where you at. Tell me where you at. From St. P to L.A., Brooklyn to J.A., D.C. to Hayday, all the way to
tell me where you at,
It's time to get it now, we gotta make this revolution.
Where y'all at?
Where y'all at?
Where y'all at? 5 million in the club, 200,000
in Sierra Leone,
so
a million more in Rwanda. I'm tired of it, our people can't keep
what
out
about
this, man.
There's no way logical with resources starting from the coal and aluminum and diamonds. What about them?
Africa is rich. We shouldn't have to be poor.
What about them?
We don't gotta beg nobody for nothing. Let's take our resources back.
If we each touch one, we can all touch all of the knives and full of this cause. Tell me where you at.
This ain't a game out here. Our people are dying.
Tell me where you at.
We can't wait. How long are we supposed to wait until we gonna be
from
free?
From St. Peter, L.A., Brooklyn,
J.A., D.C. to Hayday,
all the way to Hayday.
Comrades in Paris, London, Jamaica, Haiti. You know what I'm saying? We gotta make this happen.
Uhuru, welcome back to Africa Live here on uhururadio.com. We've been playing today an interview that that I had the opportunity to do on last week with Comrade Cherno Alpha Mba. Comrade Cherno Alpha Mba was who is the director of the Africanist movement in West Africa. Is here, has been here on the, in the U.S. on tour with for African People Solidarity Day. And so we had the opportunity to get him into the studio over the past week and to do that interview. I hope that folks were listening closely about the all the things that are happening in West Africa right now. We talked primarily about what was happening in Sierra Leone and in Guinea. With the, you know, the recent elections in Sierra Leone, the rebellions that happened not long ago in Guinea, and with the National Democratic Revolutionary Program being put forth by the Africanist movement in both places. You know, I think it's important to note, you know, some of the things he was saying just in terms of the centrality at this time of the struggles that are going on there in West Africa, to the African liberation movement. I think it's important that we note that, that we throw in our support, for the struggles being waged by the Africanist movement and, as the leadership of the African working class there in that area. The Africanist movement, for those who, you know, may not have caught that part of the interview, or maybe new, to Uhuru Radio, is an organization that's part of the African Socialist International, which is an organization around the world of African revolutionaries that is being built now. And the process of building that organization has been a process that was led by the African People's Socialist Party. You know, so we should support the struggle to build the African Socialist International. The struggles being waged on the ground there in West Africa and Guinea-Conakry and in Sierra Leone, and anticipate that that there's much to be learned there in those struggles, and there's a serious impact that that what happens there on the ground there will have on our struggles for the liberation and unification of Africa. Wherever we are struggling for it, so just wanted to say that and let folks know again. On next week, we're going to be playing an interview that I had the opportunity to do with Comrade Mfanelo Squacha, who is the executive secretary of the Pan Africanist Congress of Azania. You know, stay tuned because we got more good stuff coming up here on AhuruRadio.com. We'll be listening to Uhuru on the Move, and after that, colonialism is bad for your health, and then white solidarity with black power. So stay tuned for more great programming here on AhuruRadio.com.
Bombay 727 Miss P Productions. CeeLo, CeeLo, ASI, Swell, ASI, for cool. When we say, Ease, Will, and Two,
come on, everybody.
Africa,
Azania,
we are indeed saying, Tanzania, Africa is our land, Cameroon, that's real, Senegal, Ease, Will, and Two, Congo, Africa,
Niger,
that's right,
Mauritania.
Africa,
Africa,
Africa, Africa.
Zimbabwe, forget the UK, Venezuela and Brazil and Cuba, Jamaica and Haiti. It's one choice, we one voice, it's one stand, we taking from one land. So from Angola down to Sudan, let's all march to Senegola, build a revolution. Africans united in strong unison. Ethiopia, Algeria, to Ghana, to Botswana, calling out to my troops, get your roots, and we gon' fight for the truth. Cross back to Uganda, a million Africans, 90 days, so we got to hit Rwanda. 5 billion, 5 years in the Congo, that's about 100 billion years worth of blood flow. But from Ronnie Spear to you, though. One settler, one bullet, yeah, that's what we do, though. From the gates to the cabinet, and the gas violent to my rock way. These where the people gon' fight. These where the people gon' fight. From the gates to the cabinet, E-Africa, and the gas violent to my rock way. E-Africa, these where the people gon' fight. These where the people gon' fight. E-Africa. American, European, or speed, it just don't make sense. So we put sense in its place. We 1 billion strong, but 1,000 different names got us misplaced. But 1 billion different things got us disgraced. We usually highlight the pain, but in this case, you see, the movement is the key. The only way to see improvement is to move in unity. From Cape Town up to Cairo, Madagascar, and Morocco. And all the people.
We're moving right out of Babylon, and we're going to our father's land. Yeah, how good and how pleasant it would be before God and man, yeah, to see.